And this is 89.1 WEMU, your community NPR station. I'm David Fair, and there's a lot happening on the federal level that has potential impacts on Michigan and Washtenaw County. On the other end of our phone line this morning is 12th District Congresswoman Debbie Dingell. She joins us to provide her perspective on things, and thanks, as always, for your time.
Good morning, David, and my Fridays are always richer for being able to talk to you and your listeners.
Well, we all appreciate it. Thank you very much. Now, last week, President Biden introduced his $2 trillion American Jobs Act, which has caused all sorts of debate about infrastructure and how we should define infrastructure. There's a lot more in the plan than just roads, bridges, and water systems and the like. How do you define infrastructure?
You know, yesterday I looked up the word infrastructure in the Webster Dictionary, and part of the definition is foundation, the framework from which you do things. And, you know, coming out of the Deep Recession, we weren't calling roads and bridges infrastructure at that time, but they were a framework that held us together. So I am somebody, there are many things that are going to be included in this bill that we need to be giving serious attention to. If you're in Michigan, fix the dam roads, the bridges. We need to replace lead in water pipelines. But broadband, we've seen our students in schools have the inequitability of young people's access to broadband, which impacts people of all ages. Electric vehicle infrastructure, the dams that broke in Midland. I've introduced part of it will be a dam bill that John Molinar and I have done. But I'm also going to be very, very straightforward with everybody on this phone call. I think caregiving is a very much a part of infrastructure. If you look at the last year, people who, the women that have left the workforce in very significant large numbers because they're caring for children and they're caring for their parents and for other family members. Long-term care is broken in this country. I recognized it when I became a caregiver, and I'm luckier than 99 9/10 of the people in this country. And the days I would just go into tears and the fears that I had, I will be one of the leaders of long-term care in this bill because this country needs to fix it. It is one of the critical foundations in our communities of being able to take care of our seniors, our elders, and keeping people as long as they can in their home and community-based situations. So that meets my definition of infrastructure as well.
So allow me to be very understated for a moment. This measure faces an uncertain future in Congress. Given your support of the measure, what efforts are you making to ensure its passage?
Well, I've begun working very hard. I mean, quite frankly, we don't even know how it's really going to begin to move. Is it going to be one bill? Is it going to be two bills? The president hasn't given his speech on what the second half of this is going to be. I am working on several pieces of this very hard. I do have the electric vehicle infrastructure piece. How do we ensure I'm being very intentional in discussions with unions and the environmentalists so we are protecting jobs in the United States of America, ensuring that we're creating jobs here. We're not using any American tax dollars for any jobs that would go overseas. How do we protect the climate, global climate, and jobs at the same time? That's been a very significant part of my last 2 weeks, just bringing people together to find that common ground and reach. With regard to long-term care, I have been working with all of the experts, with HHS, with caregivers, long-term caregivers, various caregiving organizations, SEIU, the White House, to talk about what does that mean. In the last bill, by the way, we expanded or put more money in to home and community-based care than has been, and it saves Medicaid money. That's what people don't realize. Not only does it contribute to the quality of life for many people, both the caregiver and the person that needs care, but in staying in their own community, it saves money for Medicaid.
We are talking with Congresswoman Debbie Dingell on 89.1 WEMU as we move our conversation from infrastructure to gun policy. Yesterday, President Biden declared U.S. gun violence an epidemic and an international embarrassment. He outlined actions to regulate certain firearms and try and prevent gun violence after a spate of mass shootings in recent weeks. Gun control measures are a divisive issue. Comparatively speaking, the death penalty was supposed to be a deterrent to violent crime. Statistics show that has not been the case. Might this be another case of trying to put Pandora back in the box?
You know, David, I'm very honest about where I come from on this. This was the issue that John Dingell and I had the most intense discussions. I lived with a man who went to bed every single night with a gun under his pillow, and he was a responsible gun owner. And I lived with a man who should not have had access to guns and know the fear of thinking that you could die at any minute. We need to, what I wish is that just for once, that when these discussions start, that everybody didn't go to their corners and just stop talking to each other and there was no kind of communication. I don't know if people realize there were two more mass shootings yesterday. It's happening every day in this country and we're becoming immune to them. We're getting to the point that we're just numb. It doesn't matter. We've got to take action to reduce gun violence in our country. We've got to make our community safer, and we got to save lives. It's a public health epidemic. But I don't want to take someone's gun away that's a responsible gun owner. But I sure don't want people, and I'll say it again, like my father, who shouldn't have had guns. I just was, when you called this morning, I was talking to Fred Upton about the red flag laws again, and should we reintroduce it? President talked about it yesterday, but Fred and I are working on it.
Gun rights advocates, as you have pointed out, have been consistent in saying that control measures are a slippery slope, and enacting such laws and policies is a step towards government seizing private citizens' weapons. How do you respond when they bring that argument to your desk?
If you shouldn't have a gun, you wouldn't have a gun, but what's wrong with background checks? And, you know, I argued this for a very long time with my husband, who had many. I'll leave it at that, but I'll take his collection to anybody. But there are certain people that should not have guns. Should people be allowed to stand in front of my house with assault weapons? Should people be allowed to take, assault weapons into shopping centers? I mean, we need to just really, should people be allowed to have guns in front of nuclear facilities? Do we want them on college campuses? Do we want them in houses of worship? Now, I know there's some that do, and I actually know that in Texas, someone that had one outside saved lives. But can't we just respect each other, listen to each other, not yell at each other, but actually have real conversations with respect and listening and maybe finding some common ground?
We shall see how that plays out. It will continue to be at the fore of federal conversations and its impact in states like Michigan. Our conversation with Michigan's 12th District Congressional Representative Debbie Dingell continues on WEMU. I do want to talk about the new surge in cases of coronavirus. Michigan among the nation's worst in new cases and hospitalizations. 16 health systems in the state reporting near capacity levels. Michigan Medicine canceling and rescheduling many surgeries, as are many other health systems. There are a good number of people calling on Governor Whitmer to enact more stringent restrictions once again. To this point, she has decided against doing so. Agree or disagree with the governor?
I have had talked to her yesterday. CDC is on the ground. I know she's listening to the people of Michigan. I know all of us have a role to play right now. We all have COVID fatigue. The problem is COVID's not fatigued to us. People are dying. I know more people that died this week. We all have to wear our masks, keep our physical distance, and get those vaccines. I am helping her try to, Fred Upton and I yesterday, were making nonstop calls and did a letter asking for more vaccine. I think the public health officials in the state are evaluating this each day. She's heard Michiganians. She's heard their anger. She's heard the Republicans in the legislature. CDC is saying we should be looking at more restrictions. She's listening to everybody, and she's going to have to make decisions day by day.
When it comes to giving states with a surging number of cases a priority in vaccine distribution, the argument against is that the states that are doing better will be penalized for doing what they're asked. What's your position? How do you respond to those valid concerns?
Well, first of all, I don't think we haven't been doing what we've been asked. I mean, this state has had...
This state hasn't, but there are others who are seeing declines in cases.
Right, but we've been doing everything we've been asked and aren't seeing the decline. Scott Gottlieb, former FDA commissioner, was on Morning Joe this morning and said that states like ours that are seeing surges should be getting more vaccine. Public health experts are saying that the policy is that when you see something like that, you should get more into the system. We are producing more. The supply has increased. There are some states that everybody needs to get the vaccine, and we need to keep getting that supply out as fast as we can. But the state is, when they get vaccines, has an 85% getting those shots into the arms rate on a daily basis. And I think that when you've got the kind of numbers, we have 7 out of the 10 cities seeing the largest COVID outbreaks are in Michigan. We have the largest surge of any state in the country. We have followed the rules. People are really angry. They've got COVID fatigue. We have a responsibility to all keep following the rules. And if we stop following the rules, we are going to pay the price. But I think we need to look at sound public policy, which would say get more vaccines here.
We will continue our conversation next week. I thank you for the time today.
Thank you, David. Have a good, safe week.
That is 12th District Congresswoman Debbie Dingell. I am David Fair, and this is your community NPR station, 89.1 WEMU-FM and HD1 Ypsilanti.